Welcome to the 5-9, the official podcast of the Fierce Telecom and Technology Group. Join us each week for the latest insights on 5G, millimeter wave, AI, electronics, sensors, networking, infrastructure, and more in the communications and technology space.
All right, welcome everyone to another week of the 5-9 podcast brought to you by Fierce Wireless. As always, my name is Alejandro Piñero, your host. And this week, I am once again joined by not one, but two great experts of our industry, folks that probably need very little introduction, but I'll allow them to speak a little bit about what they're up to lately. I'm joined, of course, by Stephen Rose, General Manager of Global Industries at IBM, and Alex Sinclair, CTO of the GSMA. Welcome both. Thanks so much for joining us here at the podcast.
Good morning.
Pleasure to be here.
Before we get started, I did say you guys probably need no introduction, but in the sake of keeping everyone level in terms of their background, I just wanted to give you both an opportunity to introduce yourselves and generally the organization and where you sit and what your role is. Stephen, shall we start with you?
Sure, why not? Thanks. So, yeah, Stephen Rose, I'm the, as you said, General Manager for Global Industries. What does that actually mean? It means that IBM has a series of go-to-markets, and one of them is actually understanding and making sure that our technology and our partnerships actually intersect with industries, and we make sure that the various different industries that we serve, whether they be banking, whether it be the telco, or whether they be industrials, or other types of industrials, we're able to serve them with the technology and the partnerships that we actually have. So I look after that part of the business, and of course, one of the fantastic partnerships that we have is with the GSMA.
Wonderful. And Alex, your role at the GSMA and perhaps just a few words on who the GSMA represents.
As you know very well, the GSMA is the global industry association for all the telcos on the planet. We've got more than 700 of them, which is virtually all of them. We also have a couple of hundred, 200 to 300 actually non-telcos that are also part of our ecosystem as well, and increasingly people from outside. So as Chief Technology Officer, obviously my remit is looking over all the technical side of the programs. We do a lot of standard setting work in our working groups, which are very well attended. We also do outreach through what we call communities. That's generally branching into other sectors like manufacturing and fintech and stuff like that. I also run GSMA Intelligence, which is our in-house analyst function. And then last but not least, we have our foundry, which is there to basically promote innovation in the industry. And the foundry is playing one of the key parts of the relationship we have with Stephen in IBM. The other one is something called GSMA Advance, which we'll come back to later.
Excellent. Well, I know firsthand how busy both of you are, so we do really appreciate you coming on. And the reason why we wanted to invite you this week is off the back of a very exciting announcement in my eyes that you've made together. It focuses on adoption of AI in the telecom sector. Now, I think that's a fairly broad point to start. There's probably a lot of detail to go into there. So let's start with you, Stephen. Why this partnership with GSMA? What's IBM's role? And what are the opportunities and the challenges there for the telco industry broadly when we think about AI?
Yeah, let me just give a bit of a backdrop to what it was that got us to this point in the first place. And that was we were in Mobile World Congress in Las Vegas, and we came together, and it was clear there were two things that were happening. One is what we saw is that there was a great challenge to try and even understand what is the difference between generative AI and traditional AI, and how does that actually then change the way in which business is going to be conducted or operations are going to be run in the future. And the second one was making sure that the gap between those who can do it now because they've got the money and the resources to do it at scale and those that actually are less inclined or maybe perhaps are behind the curve for whatever good reason, we needed to make sure that gap was closed. So what we did is we said, we're going to try and tackle those two things together. And through a series of discussions, we ended up with three parts to the scope. The first part of the scope is an education and learning element of that. So making sure that the executives in the industry and the developer community understand what AI is, how to run with it, what are the benefits and the efficacy of generative AI. The second element of it is making sure that people can get access to the technology, play around with it, understand what the use cases are, and be in a position to try to learn it at the same speed across the entire industry, not just for a select few. And then the third part of that was to explore and exploit different types of strategies on the basis of co-innovation around data and how data is actually used across different parts of the industry. So those are the three sort of elements of that. It's a very exciting partnership, and we really start as of right now. We launched this week.
Amazing. And Alex, I understand from the press release that your role would fall, or GSMA's role rather, will be in large part in bringing that training element, convening the carriers and bringing this information to them. Can you perhaps expand a little bit on what the GSMA will be doing and if this is a starting point and if you see it growing from there?
Let's start with the training element first, because I think that's a really important driver, because Steve and I have a common vision, which is what we call democratization of AI. Sounds a bit bold, I know, but we're basically trying to get as many people as possible having access and the ability to use these fantastic tools. So training is important. We have a training function at GSMA. It's called GSMA Advance. And that's something that's really important to us. And it was a natural for us to partner with IBM because they have the expertise. In fact, Steve and team were kind enough to actually train quite a bunch of GSMAers before the holiday season. And not my team, some of my team were there. It was everybody from corporate services, marketing. And it was a really good demonstrator of the kind of audiences that we're trying to reach together in future. You know very well that at the GSMA, we've had a number of gaps over the years that we've been trying to fix. It used to be the coverage gap. Remember that when nobody had a cell tone? That's pretty much non-existent anymore. Then we have the usage gap now where people have coverage, but they still don't use it because it's either too expensive or they don't see a reason to. You've had gender gaps, financial inclusion gaps, digital divide. What we're trying to avoid here is effectively a new AI gap. Stephen referenced it already. The superpowers are already pouring vast amounts of resources, compute resources, money, and energy into training these massive LLMs. That's not something that can be replicated at scale, really. And our focus is also obviously not just producing another ChatGPT for consumers, but looking at what you can do in the enterprise space. And that's another thing that, of course, IBM is an absolute past master of. So it's combining, if you like, the reach of the GSMA and our membership, because if you get to those 700 telcos around the planet, that is an amazing platform, not just to reach consumers, which everybody thinks about, but also to reach the enterprises as well. And we're also very keen to work together. We have our foundry. We've done a whole series of projects, everything from 5G advanced to beyond visual line of sight drones and agriculture. We want to challenge people to come up with different ways to use AI, because AI is applicable in everything. People think about network predictive maintenance, cybersecurity. It will be used for literally everything in future. So that's what we want to use the foundry challenge for. And of course, to do that, you don't just need the expertise, you need the tools. And that's why, again, IBM's got WatsonX and basically all of the Lego bricks that we need to make some really exciting stuff happen. So we are really, truly excited about this.
Absolutely. And Stephen, I wanted to give you the chance also to speak to that AI gap. Now, I've been very fortunate to follow this WatsonX AI journey from its launch in IBM Think earlier this last year now in Orlando. I got to see some great demos in MWC Las Vegas in terms of how it was coming. Now, I think this seems to me like a next step in addressing this, the AI gap, and in terms of telecom specifically. What are some of the outcomes, really, that if this isn't addressed, how do you see this evolving, and what need does this partnership address from that perspective?
I mean, I think there are a few gaps that could appear that you need to solve for. One of them is, of course, gaps between tier one players and tier two and tier three players. That's the first one. Yeah. So again, if you just think about the cost of and building LLMs or building the capabilities within your own organization to be able to ensure that you have an understanding of how to take advantage of the technology, then that's a clear distinction that traditionally would have happened, right? Because you would tier ones typically have a lot more money, they have a lot more power, they have a lot more resources. So we wanted to make sure that those things are available to everybody in concurrency. That's the first issue. The second issue, of course, is that if you're a telco operator today, it's not just about how you apply AI and infuse it across your operations to be able to make you do things better, cheaper, faster, but it's about how quickly you can keep up with your customer base. So if your customer base is also running ahead at 1,000 miles an hour because they're also increasingly adopting AI, that means that their operational change or the way in which they will evolve their business model will be at an accelerated rate with the adoption of AI. Of course, if you're a CSP, you need to keep up with that as well. So there are a number of different gaps. And Alex actually was talking about it just now, which is the way that you solve the gap is you make the a technology available to as many operators as you can at once. But the biggest thing is you make the technology available to as many users as possible. So what we want to do is we want to turn all of the users into content creators. And it used to be in the old days, in many respects, the computer science was the dark arts. You paid a lot of money for very expensive computer science experts that would be able to come in, and they had the kind of mystique around them that they would be able, the only ones that would be able to take advantage of this type of technology. Nowadays, with low code, no code environments and the ability to take use cases, have them share small bits of code between different operators around the world, you drop the adoption gap to a very much more accessible level. And as a result of that, you accelerate and you proliferate the technology across the organization. So again, we want to turn users into content creators. If you can do that, then you get to see where all the, it's sort of a mass distributed experimentation exercise that happens. And because of that, you will see a great deal of new use cases become available across the industry. So this is a great way of generating a ton of new experimentation that ordinarily would have been very hidden or very select.
Yeah. And picking up on that thought around the use cases that this would enable, Alex, you mentioned, of course, the reach that the GSMA has with your members, but I would also say access, right? You are interfacing with the leadership across our globe in terms of the telco operators. Do you see particular interest in any use cases? Is it more customer facing? Is it more on the network side? Is it a bit of both? Where do you see the biggest wins early on for AI in these carriers?
Carriers have been experimenting with AI for quite a number of years now. So they tend to go back to that first. GSMA Intelligence did a report last year, and we asked them, what do you think are going to be the most impactful thing? And actually, they all pick stuff pretty close to home. So network predictive maintenance was number one. They've been doing that for a long time, and actually you don't really need Gen AI for that. You can probably use Gen AI for that. Again, I mentioned cyber attacks earlier. That was number two. Then they start talking about the impact potentially on customer retention, individualized, customized services for users and stuff like that. I think, to be honest, in the survey, there's a natural bias towards the known knowns, if you like. You tend to say first the thing you're very comfortable with. But as I said earlier, I honestly believe AI is like the universal Swiss Army knife. It can be used for literally anything. And trying to predict now where the most value is going to come from is quite difficult. And that's why we're working with IBM on this idea of telco-specific use cases. Sure, you'll start with the stuff you know, but you will discover along this journey, at least that's what we believe, you'll discover so many other things that you could be using this for. And that's the exciting part of the journey, I think.
Yeah, absolutely. Stephen, I also wanted to give you a chance to comment on that. Now, before we hit record, we were talking about your great report on telco in 2030. AI is mentioned there quite a bit. What do you see as some of those key applications early on? And are those telcos ready and taking on the challenge?
Yeah, I think it is a challenge. If I'm the CEO of any organization, especially if I'm a telco operator in a heavily regulated environment, I'm going to be thinking about this very seriously. So there are a few things I need to think about. A, what is the governance that actually I have to operate with? And to what extent is the use case ethical? So again, at IBM, we're a big believer in actually ensuring that there is sufficient oversight on the use case, not the technology itself. Technology can be applied for very decent reasons or very nefarious reasons. But if you actually govern the use case, then you get a chance to control that. And then there are data strategies and then the platform itself that all need to come together. In terms of the other considerations, there is an economic consideration. So if you think about the way in which large language models are being pulled together today, there are some that are extremely large. Yeah, very big, 100 billion parameters, those types, or there and thereabouts. Those types of models are very expensive to run. They're very expensive to create inferencing on those in a very large, or sorry, with a great deal of compute and storage, is going to be an expensive thing if you're not using them for niche and specific things. So what we think is there are two things. One is there is a way to actually develop large language models that use the open source community, or you can use your own models, or you can use IBM models for that matter. But as you go towards more distributed parts of the network, so as you go towards the edge, for example, those use cases and those models would become smaller, they'll become more niche, or they'll become more specific to a certain number of desired outcomes. So we see that there is, first off, a techno-economic inflection point to be understood. And the more distributed experimentation you have within that, the quicker you're going to find that as an answer, which is really a part of the excitement. So we're not only solving for the use case challenges, but the economic challenges that come with it. In terms of use case, I get asked this question a lot, which is where should I start? My general perspective, and it does allude to the 2030 report, which is if I have a pound or a dollar or whatever, a euro to spend, do I spend it on something that saves me money or do I spend it on something that makes me money? My answer always is spend it on something that makes money. Yeah. So the industry has had a certain level of TCO obsession over the last few years, rightly, because we haven't had the growth in the industry in the way that we wanted to. But it is time for us to be able to use this technology as a way to figure out how to grow the industry. And so that's where I would be putting my money right now. So I'd be looking at any types of new products and services, any way in which to get innovation to market at scale. It would be a way to gain feedback loops to be able to then decide on what products I would be taking to market at speed, et cetera. So there's a whole bunch of things that you could be doing in the operations and also within the products and services themselves to generate cross-sell, upsell, try to find unique offerings to customers, for example. But I would be making sure that all of those things that I'm doing are really generating revenue and not so much worried about taking out cost.
Yeah, I think that's something that sometimes our industry fails to take on board more often than not in terms of spending on something that will create value rather than savings. Although I think the evidence is there that your approach is probably a good one. And Alex, I also wanted to ask you, the breadth of the membership of the GSMA means you have the large incumbents, multinational operators. You also have the smaller folks. Steven was talking about the tier two, tier threes. How does this collaboration between IBM and GSMA allow these smaller players to have access to these tools? Because I assume Nerdiv AI, A, it might feel overwhelming, or you might be putting out fires with a small team or trying to apply different services with a limited pool of resources. Is this a way to open that door and get to your point of democratization of generative AI?
A simple answer from my part is we truly believe that. But just before I answer that question, just to pick up on another point that Stephen made around ethics and governance, we've actually got a fairly large task force of lots of tier ones and a couple of tier two operators that have been working for a couple of years. We've got an AI ethics playbook and a self-assessment questionnaire for people to use as well. We're taking that further. We're also talking to all of the sort of non-governmental organizations who are also talking about AI governance, et cetera. Most countries are as well. So on the policy side, we do an awful lot as well. And actually, Stephen in New Jersey was presenting to our chief strategy officers group. There's over 30 CSOs. Again, it tends to be the tier ones typically, but there are some of the smaller guys there. We had somebody from Ethiotel in Ethiopia, for example, and that was all very well received. But coming back to the specifics of the question, I would say our belief is that if we can use our membership to use the tools, use WatsonX, take part in the challenges, and it'll be open to everybody. You don't have to be a big guy. It's fairly easily accessible. We want to take the approach of basically effectively cookie cuttering. If we can find the right use cases, then we will be able to recreate them at scale, even for the smaller operators. I think it's fair to say our industry doesn't have a great reputation as a leader, but they're pretty quick followers. If you were to come up with a new service case, as Stephen was mentioning, and actually new value pools to be addressed, I think our messaging, our ability to get to all of those operators can help them benefit as well, instead of just the tier ones who would normally be the beneficiaries and, quite frankly, have the resources at least to train their own models. So again, I really do believe in this democratization. I do believe the challenge is a stimulus for that. But of course, what we really want is we want this to become business as usual. If people are using these tools, if they're coming up with interesting use cases, we're going to keep a catalog of these things and we're going to promote the hell out of it to make sure that everybody knows this is the sort of stuff you could be doing. And you don't need to know TensorFlow. You don't need to have 1,500 experts in machine language programming. You could do this just with the tools that are readily available and a little bit of training, which we're also going to provide through GSMA Advanced.
Excellent. We're at the top of the interview here. So I wanted to leave both of you with a question here to answer in turn. This is a brand new partnership. Of course, it's February. The whole industry is thinking with their minds at MWC. So let's frame it in terms of this time next year in 2025. As we approach the next MWC in Barcelona, where would you like this partnership to have led to? Or what does it look like in order for it to be a success? We'll have had training in different geographies. I'm sure many use cases, partners try out different elements of generative AI. Are you working to certain KPIs? Do you have certain objectives that you're working towards? Let's start with you, Stephen, from IBM's perspective, and then we'll hear from GSMA's.
Yeah, this is a really interesting thought, isn't it? Where will we be 1 year from now? I think where we'll be is two things. One is that the leadership in the industry, and it, by the way, this is a leadership moment. We need to see it as a seminal moment in industry. The leadership will understand the economic, the leadership, and the technological inflection points or problems, academically speaking, that come along with how to introduce AI across my organization. So there's going to be a lot more comfort with the way in which AI is going to be infused and the techno-economic potential within the technology. So that's the first thing. I think the second thing that you'll see because of that is, again, a great deal of adoption across within the organizations itself. People will actually be comfortable themselves. It will be technology will be integrated into ordinary workflows. Yeah, you'll become an AI-first company rather than an AI as an afterthought type company. So I think that's culture shift in a certain sense, but it's skill shift as well. And I think the third thing is we'll see, and Alex was talking about it, is we're not only going to be enabling people to have a thought about what are the use cases, but we'll be cataloging them, and then we'll be making those use cases available back out to the industry. So it's a huge co-opetition model within this. And so what we'll see is faster rates of adoption all the way through the industry, and we'll see it across all business functions. And I guarantee you what we're going to see is a set of use cases that we just aren't thinking about today because of the distributed nature of the way that we're running this. So I'm truly looking forward to it. I'm fundamentally believing in this as a not just a decent thing, but it's a decent way to make decent profits. I think it will, you know, translate economically in some point or another. But this is the start of a really brilliant partnership.
Forecasting the future is perilous. So let me give you my vision of what it's going to be like, where I hope we will be. Firstly, Alejandro, you know this. Our industry has a habit of talking about what it's going to do. I don't like to do that at Barcelona. I like to say what we've done. And what I see is we will be celebrating those initial use cases, some of the things that have been generated that we can't predict now. We'll be getting them on stage, the shortlists, the Global Mobile Award winners, and we'll be jointly celebrating what you can achieve in just 12 months with access to the right tools. I'm going to predict that Stephen's team is going to have a hell of a job because they're going to be booked out with all of the training facilities, all of the access to Watson X. In a perfect world, the demand will be, sorry, Stephen, but the demand will be so strong that you guys will have trouble keeping up with it. But you know what? That's maybe not a bad problem to have. So I think we'll be talking about what we've achieved and celebrating. That's where I want us to be in 12 months.
Excellent. I think that's a great spot to leave it. And with MWC just around the corner, I'm sure we'll be able to see this partnership really in the flesh and hear a lot more from it. So for now, Stephen and Alex, thank you so much for joining me here on the 5-9 and for giving the listeners here of the Fierce community an insight into what you're up to.
Many thanks.
It's our pleasure.
And to you, our listener, thank you as always for joining us on yet another conversation with tech leaders. We'll be back in your feed next week. Until then, take care and bye-bye.
You've been listening to the 5-9, Fierce Telecom's official telecom and technology podcast. Follow us on Zencastr to get the latest ICT insights each week. Get the latest telecom and technology news at our websites, FierceWireless.com, FierceElectronics.com, FierceTelecom.com, and FierceVideo.com. See you soon.